15 to 20 million jobs.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve the entire Philadelphia and tri-state area. I urge you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in, and get them involved in the American-made movement. If you live outside the Philadelphia area, invite everyone to tune in on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, I want to tell you, this week was a very exciting weekend. I have to tell you, we had a weekend of events, Father's Day, and all the activities. Monday, I was at a job fair. Yesterday, at a special event. It's been just a great, great time for me to meet people and enjoy the company of people who understand our movement. Yesterday, I was at an event, and someone called me the father of AmericanWorkersNeedYou.com. And by the way, they called Mark Andel the father of the Made in America store. So I took that as a great compliment.
What's Larkin the father of?
A father of the SCORE movement, who brought about the SCORE movement in the Philadelphia area to be known to more people than imagined. And we'll call Rich Logis the father of RJL technology. And of course, a man, the father of many, many good activities and all kind of wildness going on in his range. Today with us, everybody, is Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store. Larkin Connolly, as you know, is a small business advocate and a mentor for SCORE. And Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Henry Chaplinsky is here as our engineer, and I'm Michael Blihash, your host. And I thank you for stopping me in my travels to let me know that you tune in and exactly what you are doing to help the movement. On this first day of summer, I hope that you have a great summer, a great vacation, and wherever you go, make sure you look for the Made in America label. Well, last week, we were pleased to welcome a small business owner, Steve Amato, from Amato Toys and Hobby Shop. That's located at 283 Main Street in New Britain, Connecticut. And it was a great broadcast, and Steve Amato certainly knows his business and the business environment in America, and he added a lot to our efforts to help stimulate America's economy. And I want to thank Larkin, Rich, and Mark for helping me to welcome him to our broadcast and also to share information. A lot of people enjoyed the presentation. And I have to say also that the cell phones and all of the other ways on the computer that people are listening to the broadcast, that's great. I like hearing when people tell me I'm looking through my emails and I'm listening to the show, so I know exactly what is on everybody's mind. I just want to add that Steve Amato's store link is located on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and he welcomes your online business. As Larkin says so often, many, many stores are now online, and we have to support them equally. And since we know that Steve offers so many American-made products, make sure you support him. As Steve said, an employer's weekly salary comes from profits made from the business's sales. Well, salaries and other bills can't be paid from thin air, so salaries are only possible when a business makes a profit. So be sure to go out and support all of your local businesses, whether you're shopping online or going into the brick and mortar stores. They really need your business. Well, this past Monday, I had a very interesting day out. Henry Chaplinsky, Peter Groch, and I attended. We go from time to time to various job fairs. As you know, through our social service agency, I try to hook people up with various job opportunities, make sure that they have a resume prepared, because a resume is really your calling card and tells everybody what you have to offer and what is the possibility of you being employed by that particular company. Well, we were at the Northeast Philadelphia Job Fair, and I met many wonderful people, but there was one particular person that we had a great conversation with, and Henry and Peter enjoyed meeting him, and he is with me today in studio. Luckily, he's from Philadelphia, so he just took a ride down I-95, and he is here, parked on the street, worried about the meter maids and all that stuff. But his name is Alex Jimenez, and he is the community outreach representative for the Aviation Institute of Maintenance, and that's located up in Northeast Philadelphia, where I live, at 3001 Grant Avenue. And I know it, I see the sign all the time, and I know that it's there at Northeast Philadelphia Airport. And before I introduce you to our panel members one by one, I'm going to ask our guest, Alex Jimenez, if he would tell us a little bit about himself. Alex.
Well, good morning. How you doing, Michael, today?
Wonderful.
It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the opportunity. A little bit about myself. I'm prior military. I served in the service for 11 years. And the reason why I got involved in this type of career, they were actually looking for someone that was a veteran, a mission representative, to help veterans gain a career, gain the opportunity to go work and actually do something for themselves after they come out of the service. So I applied for the position. Luckily, I got accepted. 6 months later or so, I was able to transfer to what they call a community outreach representative position. My job consists of going to career fairs, going to high schools, and pretty much letting know the community that we are there, that this is a career they could get into and actually make a world living for themselves.
Very good. Alex, tell us a little bit about the programs offered there at the Institute.
So what we offer is called Aviation Maintenance Technicians. They go to school to get what is called Airframe and Power Plant Certification. With these certifications, they're authorized by the Federal Aviation Administration Part 147. In order for them to work at any airport here in the States, around the world, that uses American-built planes, in order for them to build them, repair them, construct airplanes, helicopters, drones, anything that flies, pretty much. That's what they learn at our school. Once they get that certification, that AMP certification, then they're authorized to work at the airports or work for any manufacturers like Boeing, Sikorsky, Lockheed Martin, and other companies like that.
Very nice. Now, if someone goes to the school, to the Aviation Institute, what other categories of training do they offer?
Well, definitely, they will learn so many trades within one. They will learn sheet metal, welding, hydraulic systems. They will learn electricals, AC, DC current. So there's different programs within different one subject that they learn. So pretty much they were trained to do pretty much any type of trade career that they want to. A lot of our students go into the aviation field, but we have some students that actually go work for different companies. I had one student that graduated a couple of years ago. He went to PICO. Why PICO? Because PICO uses turbine engines to generate electricity. So he maintained those turbine engines for PICO. So there is different companies within organizations that could go to and actually work. We always prefer them to go into the airlines or to the manufacturers because that's why we're there to teach. But definitely, that's not the only place that you could go to.
I see. I hear that some of your students also work in the trains, all of the train systems that go back and around with all the systems that keep the trains moving and online with the air conditioning and everything else. And that, I think, is a very important program because you are teaching a life skill to someone that will be able to support themselves for life, which is one of the main focuses of our entire broadcast and our entire campaign. We've been doing this for about, I've been doing it for about 18, 19 years. And most people in the very beginning said, oh, those things will never come back. It'll be, you know, we're going to get everything from overseas and just bring the motherboards in and throw them in to the computers. That hasn't worked too well. And we have to get our people back to where they should be. Before we went on air, I shared an article that appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer about an apprentice program that is happening here in Philadelphia, and that's at the Naval Yard. And it's more and more of these programs starting to come about like we've never seen them in the past, which is very, very good. And now I want to introduce you, Alex, to the father of the Made in America store, Mark Andel. Welcome our guest.
Hello, Alex and Mike and Rich and Larkin and Henry. And Alex, great to have you on board. Great to hear you talking about skilled trades and the want for aviation mechanics. My father had taken, he's 80 now, but he took aviation mechanics in Burgard up here in Western New York years ago, and they taught him a ton. You know, back then you sewed, you know, his cloth on the wings, and he learned how to TIG weld, but it was a different, it wasn't TIG welding, it was gas oxyacetylene welding, but you could weld aluminum with it, so he learned many, many things with the aviation mechanics back in the day. But Alex, great. I'm always, I own General Welding and Fabricating and the Made in America stores. We represent skilled trade workers, so I'm always fighting the fight to try to find workers. It's such a different day now. We can't find young kids that ever held a hammer or a screwdriver. Right now I'm looking for 20-plus welders. Slowly we're finding kids to work with, or Penn State, Alfred, I work with the colleges. But tell me a little more about your program and your guy. I read a little bit about what you do online, but just give me a little bit more of these, you know, finding the young men or women with want. It's awesome that you say they're out there and you're actually bringing them on board.
Well, definitely, like I was talking to Michael earlier today, I think the biggest challenge that we have since I've been doing this for 3 years now is actually going to schools and trying to get those kids to go into the this type of career. A lot of high schools nowadays push everybody to go to four-year schools, and sometimes you don't need to go to a four-year school to actually make a career for yourself. You know, anybody that goes into this type of field could have a well-living, paying job and actually have a career for the rest of their lives. So it's my job to go out there and actually promote. You know, hey, this is, you could do this for a living. You know, if you like working with your hands, if you like to, you know, learn new things, take things apart, put them back together, then this is the field that you need to get into.
And how are they receiving that, Alex? I mean, are you doing it with slides, or you've probably got your booth set up, and how do you show them pictures and things? Because when I walk, you know, kids through, we started an internship with our local school, but it's in 12th grade. To me, it's too late because they say, hey, that's cool, but, you know, my father wants me to be a lawyer. I don't really want to be. How do you, you know, how are you presenting that to the kids to get them to think about it?
Well, the first thing that I do is we have two awesome presentations in our school that we use in high schools. One is called Life After High School, and the other is called Career Interview 101. I pretty much teach them how to get ready for job interviewing skills, how to dress, how to talk, how to answer the questions, how to sit. And so those slides, about 75% of the slides is for them to know what's going to happen after they graduate high school. The other slides at the end of it talks about our school. This is the program that we offer. This is the careers that you could get into. This is the benefits that you could get in this career. So I kind of try to open their eyes and let them know there's something else different out there than the traditional four-year school or two-year school colleges.
And you can, you know, I've seen in the email that you can make $30 to $50 an hour, but you can make quite a good livelihood then if there's overtime or whatnot. And then no matter what in life, you're set. If you know a skilled trade, you probably never starve. You can do something from aviation mechanics, which is the higher tech of all the mechanics. You can always, you know, work on cars or anything, appliances and whatnot, correct?
Correct. There's different, so many different fields you could get into, because you learn a little bit from every field there is out there within one major field. So definitely they could go into different programs. Also, for us, it's better they go into the aviation field because that's what they're learning. And pretty much this is what, you know, you could actually make a great living. People with the AMP certification, you not necessarily could stay here in the States. They could go anywhere in the world as long as the U.S. aircraft made. So if they want to go to Asia, they want to go to Europe, they want to go to South America, as long as there are American planes that they're working on, they have no problem finding employment. Right now, I think there's about 610,000 positions available around the world within this field, 113,000 just here in the States.
Very well said. And I want to tell you something. I just want to interject this. Mark and Alex and Larkin and everybody listening, there are over 6 million positions in America right now, open, ready, and available, but we don't have the people trained to enter those positions. And they're not just standing at a regular production line. They are taking care of the machines so that the stuff is all computerized and all. We don't have those technicians coming out of high school or college, and that's one of the things we've been pushing for a long time. How about we ask Dr. Larkin Connolly to welcome our guest?
Hey, good morning, Michael and Mark, Rich and Henry. Alex Jimenez, welcome to the program. I usually open up with an opening remark, and it's funny that the tail end of this remark addresses exactly what you're doing here. But I wanted to make note of the continuing spiral of the Democratic Party last night and yesterday in a campaign in Georgia where both parties spent over $50 million. The slide of the minority party, the Democrats, who ran a platform promising to derail Donald Trump's administration, came to another disastrous conclusion. The Republican was elected. This better be a wake-up call to the Dems that business as usual is not going to work in this country. And it better also be a great wake-up call to the Republicans that while they have this overwhelming majority, they better get to work, and they better improve the quality of life of every American. So let's stop the political games that each side is playing and get back to running our nation. The Chuck Schumer tape in which he and his staff made fun of our president's opening cabinet meeting only confirms how unqualified that man is to play any part in the operation of this country. Schumer is an embarrassment to the United States. We have millions of students graduating from high schools and colleges who are grossly unqualified to fill the millions of jobs that are available today. From health care to education, this country is in terrible shape. Please, elected officials, get back to collaborative work and quit playing these stupid political games. And to that end, the education remark, I applaud, Alex, everything that you're doing to recognizing that obviously high school graduates are not leaving college prepared to do much of anything except minimum wage food service jobs. And for that matter, in college, they're graduating also without the ability to do that. I've heard about your school. I think it's great what you do, especially for veterans. I think there are a handful of these kinds of initiatives that are working well for all of the people that participate in them. How long does it take? Let's take a look at. I'm the father of all people who have two left hands. How long would it take you to teach me to be a welder?
Well, that's one of the, I guess, subjects inside the program that we offer. The program itself is 21 months. It's 1,920 hours because, you know, anything in the air, in the aviation field is by hours. So it's 1,920 hours and then to complete the subjects and the classes and be able to graduate. So 21 months
now. Alex, if I wanted to focus on, say, welding first, is that how it works, or does it go by a schedule of what the school wants you to accomplish A to Z?
It is. It actually, you start with air, we start with general. You get a general knowledge of what you need to know. Airframe and power plant. We've seen within the airframe and the power plant area, that's where you start learning the welding part.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, guys. I think that 21 months of this program will set you up for life. Because as I was out at this job fair on Monday, I stood in the entrance on the stair, and every person that walked in thought that I was one of the main gazobbles of the job fair. And they would come over and start talking to me, tell me different things. When I went around the job fair, I also had a great opportunity to talk individually to the people. The young people coming out of our schools with no future, very poor counselors in the school, urging the boys and girls to come up with a beautiful resume to when they go out, that is their calling card. I mean, it's pretty scary. And some of the kids, the younger people that were there, had just graduated either this past season or last year and are still walking around looking for job opportunities. Now, there were many very nice exhibitors there at the job fair, but, you know, they don't have the skills that many of these places are going to need, especially some of the places that are sales positions. Many of these people are timid and were not able to really present themselves. They opened up to me, but not in a way that I would be able to say you'd be able to sell me, you know, one of a dozen things. So I encourage them to go home, make a resume, and make sure you come to the next job fair very prepared, which is something I was shocked. Maybe 60% of the people had a resume. The others came walking in, you know, just to look around. And that's something that I found very interesting, too. But, Alex, I want to ask you to speak for a moment to another gentleman who is a weekly part of our broadcast. And this is, he's the father of a brand new daughter, Isabella. She was born in August last year. So Isabella is taking good care of her dad, and her dad is a former writer, and he is a great person to deal with, and a lot of good information he shares with us, along with Larkin and Mark. And I want you to be introduced to Rich Logis. Rich.
Thank you, Michael, and good morning to everyone. Alex, really appreciate you being on. I'm a former writer turned born again writer, because I've got a book coming out later this year, which I'll announce pretty soon on the show. Now, Alex, I'm not sure what Michael may have said to you coming on as a piggyback to Larkin. I hope Michael didn't make it sound like we weren't going to talk at least a little about politics on today.
Well, I know that Larkin watched the news reports this morning. And you know what, Larkin? I got to the point now that I can only take about a minute and a half of it before I turn the set off, because I can't take the same underhanded back and forth stabbing each other. And I already know who wants to stab who. Give me information how we're going to help our people get back to work. How are we going to help make our communities great again? How are we going to respect each and every American that calls America their home?
So Michael, I agree with that. And I'm as tired of them as you are. The problem is, how many times can the Democrats lose? How low is that party going to get before it realizes that business as usual is not going to work? They've got to step up and be collaborative partners in the House and in the Congress, House and in the Senate, in order to get things done.
I agree.
All they do right now is, let's see what we can do to get Trump out of office. What we can do. Now listen, the same condition existed when Obama was in there. They weren't quite as offensive, but they, you know, Mitch McConnell said the day after Obama was elected, I'm going to do everything in my power to see that he doesn't get a single piece of legislation passed. Well, that's, you know, that didn't work. And the Dems can continue it all they want and warn about what's going to happen in 18 and all the rest of the stuff, but they keep on losing and they keep on losing. And Rich and I could entertain this entire audience for an hour and a half talking about the top 24 cities in this country, all democratically operated, and the condition of those cities, their economy, their infrastructure, their political bias. You know, we've got to get away from this. This isn't a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. It's an issue where we're just not paying attention. It's just what's going to sell papers. You know, it's like I said, one of the biggest problems we have is pharmaceuticals in the healthcare business. But do you think that that wonderful press that keeps us so well informed about things is going to let the pharmaceuticals stop absolutely dominating the airwaves from 5 to 7 at night? Nah, it's feeding them. It's making their business work. It's, you know, so. We just have to get our heads out of the sand and get back to work. That's all. We have to do more of what Alex Jimenez is doing, and a hell of a lot less than what that useless House and Congress are doing.
Alex, I want to ask you something. He's right. And, you know, I wish we could get after the politicians, all of them, all sides of the aisle, and get after them to start promoting the trades back in our schools. And the reason I'm saying that is so often people tell me, I'm ready to hire, I need 5 guys or 6 guys. And I'm really hesitant to do that, because so many of the job training programs, they come in, They last 6 weeks and they're gone. It's too hard. It's too intense. You know, I'm gone. I really believe, and I've been promoting for a long time, that we have to get those trades back in our school so that someone already in the seventh and eighth grade has an idea where their path is. Do they want to work with their hands? Do they want to be a doctor? Do they want to be a science? Do they want to be in an artist? They already should know by the time they go to ninth grade where they want to go. And from ninth grade forward, my daughter, Donna, she knew she wanted to be an artist for a long time. So we nurtured to make sure that she'd be a great artist. And she has one of two careers to always take care of herself. My other daughter, Marion, the same thing. She has, you know, a realtor. She's a business person. They were not doing that in the general public schools these days, and that has to change. And that is where I'm pleased to hear that you're going out to the schools. Now, give me an idea what your response is when you go to a school.
It all depends on the schools that actually would not let me in. And I had, you know, little conflicts with them because I'm trying to talk to them, let them know there's, you know, there's more options out there. So there's some schools that we're not allowed to go into. No trade schools allowed to go into. They're all four-year schools, which is unfortunately. But I could say this. I know for a fact for the last 2 years, what we established in our school is we have a summer camp for juniors and seniors. Why? Because we want them to get them exposure into this field. So they could go to school, in our school, for free for a whole week, 9 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They get a chance to work with their hands. They get a chance to learn what everybody out there is learning. They get a chance to build a model aircraft that they take home at the end of the week. And on top of that, they also get a chance to taxi a plane, one of our planes, at the airport. So they have exposure to this type of field even before they actually either graduate or they graduate from high school, for them to know if this is going to be a career they want to choose.
Very good. I love that. Wow, the summer camp. Wonderful. How do you sign up for that?
All they have to do is call the school, ask for myself. I believe it's the second week of July that we're going to start summer camp. We have 2 weeks. They could go to the first week or they go to the second week.
And what is the age category?
Juniors or seniors, high school students.
Very good. Mark, you probably like hearing that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, in touching back on the skilled trade shortage, Mike, you just hit it like in ninth grade. They've got to give aptitude tests again. I was just talking to some teachers. If the kids and the students aren't getting the reading and whatnot, they got to identify that and allow these kids and find their natural, what their natural ability or purpose is. You know, but finding the skilled trades now, right now we got the oil mining boom, we got military projects going on, and Mike, we've hired probably 10 people over the last 12, 13 or 2 to 3 weeks, I should say. But one of my major customers is having such a shortage, it's actually could really destroy their business. This skilled work shortage is hitting fast and hard. You cannot grow America without answering this problem. Like, we do need to get the trades back in school. Like, I had the metal shop, the wood shop, power mechanics, right in high school, your regular high school, to give you a taste of it. But what you're doing, Alex, is just wonderful, and you're going to these schools, and you're having the camps, and you're exposing these students to it so they have a choice and say, hey, that's pretty neat. I think you're doing a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I do want to get Rich back on, because, Rich, I think you had a little bit more to say, too, to Alex.
Yeah, you know, welcome, Alex, to the Lion's Den. You know, Mike probably told you, don't worry. Well, no problem. Have a couple coffees. Come right in. Here comes Hurricane Larkin. Woo! Come right in. You know, hey, look, the thing is this. Just one point on that. You know, John Ossoff, he didn't in the Georgia election last night, doesn't even live in the congressional district. Now, that doesn't matter, or it didn't matter, to the Dem voters, the Democrat voters. And that's fine. That's their prerogative. If they wanted to, I lived in New York, and Hillary Clinton became a senator, and she walked around with a Yankees hat on. She probably couldn't have told you five Yankees in the history of the franchise, but it doesn't matter. The Dems voted her in twice, and that was that. So, you know, I'll hearken back, Larkin, to, you know, the point that I've made earlier, and it's what President Obama said in 2009 when he was elected, that elections have consequences. You know, when you win an election, you you tell the other side that lost that elections have consequences. You had your shot. You lost. So you need to work with me. And it was great for 8 years, you know, for the Dems with the presidency. And now you fast forward 8 years, and, well, those same elections have those same consequences. So that's just the only point I'll make on that. It was the most expensive House race ever in the history of the United States in that district yesterday with Handel and Ossoff. So it's just a point on that. So I was on your LinkedIn. I was looking at your background. Very impressive. You've done a lot of things. I noticed that you were a manager for 4 years at McDonald's.
Yes.
And what I thought immediately, what I thought to ask you about, and it's just what came to mind, because it seems to be all over the place recently and over the last few years. So working in a McDonald's and being a manager, what a business, right? McDonald's. I mean, what a business that must be for that general manager. But as a manager, I'm wondering, when you would have applicants come in, were they mostly young people? Was it a mixture of people? Did you have maybe some seniors come in who were looking for a second job? When you had the applicants come in, what was generally their nature? Were they young people when they'd come in?
A lot of young people, some adults, some seniors. So a little mixture of everything. I could say that the store that I worked at, we were a $5 million store on sales every year. So for a small town in Alabama, that was a humongous revenue every year. And we were staffed. And we had a lot of individuals working there, especially during the daytime. But most of my employees were either recent graduate high school students or kids that were still in high school, which for me was awesome because they always were dependable. You know, you ask them, if somebody called out, you ask them, you want to come to work, the first thing they say is yes, because they want the money. So definitely I always had a good turnout with the high school students and the recent graduate students and kids that were still in college or whatever now looking for a part-time job.
Now, Alex, I have one other question, which you may not be able to answer, and that's fine, because I understand you may not want to speak for the general manager and the owners of the restaurant. But do you think, let me ask you this broadly, do you think that if McDonald's restaurants across the nation had to pay everyone a minimum of $15 an hour, do you think that people would lose their jobs and would be replaced by technology?
No, I doubt it. I think McDonald's itself, they have no problems making a good income every month. I know the insides of it. I know how much one item costs for us. I know one item might cost for the public. And I never seen a McDonald's go down. I always seen they always, you know, be able to grow and actually get built more. The person that I used to work for, when he first bought the franchise, he had 5 restaurants. And I believe nowadays he got like 11 restaurants. So, you know, the growth is there. Individuals get paid for what they do, and the better you get paid, the harder you're going to work. Low income should be able to, you know, nowadays we live in an economy that everything is so expensive, and people is not making the proper amount of money that they need to make in order to survive. So it's up to the companies, individual companies, because, you know, it's a franchise. So every company or every franchise is different. We have, you know, the corporation, but then we have the franchise that actually the owner is the one that implements, you know, what the salary is going to be based on the state, whatever not. But definitely, they should look better into it and you know, help out those that are, you know, working in those type of positions.
And, you know, Rich, I know many people that work at McDonald's and all of the other fast food places. They're in college. They're going to all kinds of programs. Alex, how many hours a week do you have a student there at the aviation?
They go to school Monday through Thursdays. So we have 2 shifts. We have one for 7:30 in the morning to 2 o'clock p.m. And then we have another shift coming in, another class coming in at 5 o'clock in the evening to 11 at night time.
Okay. So many of those people, the tuition would be about?
The tuition, it all depends. I don't talk normally about the tuition because I want them to see financial aid. I want them to see what they're going to get on scholarships and grants, and whether if they qualify for financial aid, how much they're going to qualify for so they could get the bottom line. on what the number of tuition is.
Very good. Well, the tuition is one of those things. I'm glad you mentioned that. You have some financial aid. I'm encouraging anybody interested to welcome someone like Alex to their event, to their schools. I think that, by the way, I don't like the idea that someone would bar you from coming into their school to talk about a great service like this, a career opportunity. It's not the first time I've heard this, where people say, no, no, we don't want to get our students talking about anything other than what we want to feed them. And that's not the way things should be done. And I think, going back for one 30-second piece on the politics, did I hear you say, Larkin, that they spend $50 million for this campaign?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, here's what I would like to – I know that advertising and everything else costs a lot of money, but I think that $45 million of that money should have been directed to job training programs at a job opportunity to get them skilled, because the biggest complaint that I hear everywhere I go is the fact that we don't have enough skilled workers, and that American industries who want to, and I mean want to, expand the American-made label find it hard to do that because they know that other countries have been making skills a big part of their educational agenda. We've been pushing mainly reading, writing, and arithmetic and other types of things, not history, but many other types of issues, but they're not pushing skills, hands-on trades, and things like that, which are needed to make any business a success.
I'd like to ask Mark to make a comment about the fact that none of these schools, not one single school, and you can go all the way down to the charter school level, makes it the slightest bit glamorous to work with your hands. They don't demonize it, but they, you know, everybody's got to be an attorney. Everybody's going to be an investment banker in New York. Everybody's going to be a doctor. Isn't that true, Mark? I mean, they don't promote it.
That, Larkin, that is the key, and Mike, what you've been talking and preaching is has to come out, because I blame the parents and guidance counselors that they don't make it okay to do this. They don't suggest it. They don't bring the kid in. When I bring these kids from our local school, it was a 54-hour program, but again, they were coming too late in 12th grade. They were walking through and saying, hey, that's cool. Look at that. What is that? That's CAD drawing. That's electrical. That's hydraulic. They were never exposed. So when we say we've got to get this back at schools, we've got to expose them at the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th level. But Larkin, you're absolutely right. They're not given the choice. When I talk about aptitude tests, we've got to find out if they're not really made for the reading, writing. That's okay. They'll hit the bare minimums, but give them an aptitude test like in Germany. Find out what they're good at, what their purpose is, and give them a purpose, and boy, they'll excel, but they have to get exposed to it. In high schools that exist, you don't got to bus them out, right?
Absolutely right.
That's right. That's absolutely right. What we need to do is to bring Alex's program down into the high school level. We really do. It's exactly what Mark has been saying all along.
Absolutely. You have to.
Into ninth grade. And I tell you that a carpenter can be just as creative as a software writer. I mean, it's just a different type of creativity, but it's all creativity. And the fact that we keep on insisting that you got to go to school so you can get a cushy job where you get to wear a suit and drive a fast car, we've got to get over that. And that's being promoted by the colleges.
And nothing wrong, Larkin, with the colleges and whatnot, but my twins are 22. They've got friends that went 3 years that are dropping out, really, but now nobody ever talks about that because that wasn't supposed to happen to Billy. You know, we pushed him this way, but now Billy doesn't really like that. They don't talk about the people. Now they got this high debt. They didn't make it. Three-year school, smart kid, but it's not what he wanted to do. They drove him somewhere where he doesn't want to be.
Exactly.
Well, I know we need more Alex Jimenez's around in the system. In fact, I wish there was an opportunity for him to train some of our high school and junior high counselors to promote this type of ability. Talking about this article in the paper today, and another article is coming to me this week, where more and more of the job training schools are beginning to welcome students. One of the biggest things that you will hear from the counselors welcoming the students, that they really have no hands-on ability. So it's like taking a child and walking them through the system. And once they have 2 or 3 months under their belt, they love it. Why couldn't they have that to the available to them in high school, so that by the time they reached a senior in high school, they already know that I want to go to the aviation school. I want to go here or there. I want to, you know, go into manufacturing. I want to do fixing of cars. I want to be a car salesman, whatever. We're not teaching our students to do that. Being at the job fair with you, Mundio and Alex, in many cases, these young people, 18, 19 years old, I almost had to pull words out of their mouth, because they're not used to presenting themselves. And when I was in school and others were in school, you have to stand up, you have to read. The people are frightened to speak up about themselves. If someone hands me a resume, I say, oh, tell me, what have you been doing in the last few months? Well, it's just, you know, I would be ready to tell you the Bible. Are very hesitant to get two sentences out of. So, Alex, I applaud what you're doing and going out to the schools. How many school visits do you make a year?
As many as I can. I'm just one person, so as many as I can, and I go out there and actually go to the schools. And one of the presentations that we have is actually called Presentation of You, which is actually talking about learning how to talk about yourself, learning to be able to express yourself, who you are as a person. And that's one of the presentations that I teach in one of the schools that I'll be able to go to. And they get a chance to actually expose themselves in that type of environment, where they can actually speak about who they are, what they like to do. Tell me, you know, a little bit about yourself. One of the questions that I asked during the career interview one-on-one is like, tell me a little bit about yourself, because that's one of the questions they normally ask in a job interview. And next thing you know, they start talking about their mom, dad, brother, sister, uncle, you know, dog, cat, and whatever not. And I'm like, that's not what I mean. I mean, tell me about yourself. Tell me about where you want to be in life. Tell me where your goals are. Tell me what you actually expect, you know, what your future is going to be. What you're going to do for this company that you're going to work for. That's what I mean. So when I actually go and do these presentations, I do my best effort for them to understand where I'm coming from. Because they'll be graduating high school soon. High school is one thing. Life is completely different. And I also talk about the gap in employment. Why gap? Because it's a gap between the regular jobs and the what we're talking about today, you know, this type of career field. That's a humongous gap. And people have to understand that. Who's going to build your house? Who's going to be able to maintain your car? Who's going to, you know, you'll be able to fly from one way to another place if there is no technicians around? And if there's nobody actually working with their hands and building things, what's going to happen in the future? So I try to, you know, be able to have them understand that there is a lot of fields out there that they could do that they didn't necessarily need a four-year school. We were talking about earlier, you know, in the career fairs, I see individuals with bachelor's degree, I see individuals with master's degree that they cannot find employment. So now they have all this money in debt owed, you know, to the government, and there's no way for them to pay it back. So they have to go back and get retrained in something different that they probably never thought they were going to do. And now, you know, they get a chance to actually do something with their life and with the career they chose.
Very good.
And Alex, do you get doors shut on you when you go to approach a school there where you want to do a speech, or because you're not promoting the four-year plan, you know, you're kind of breaking the new culture? Do you get resisted or, you know, resistance from them because of your mechanical push?
Yes, I have. I have some schools here in Philadelphia that will not accept nobody that if you're not a four-year school, you cannot go talk to the schools,
really?
To the students, yes.
Very interesting, very interesting. You know, Alex, at one time, say 25 years ago, in most of the public schools, they offered all sorts of trade shops. And then the school districts decided, well, you can go into a union and they'll have apprentice programs and all, and they just sort of pulled all of that down. Now we have a few trade schools in the counties, but it's nowhere near enough. In fact, there are waiting lists, big waiting lists, to bring boys and girls into various trade schools, and they can't accomplish that. So the kids are going to other schools, to community college, or hoping to get into a trade school. And if that doesn't happen, then they have to go to places like AP Orleans or whatever, where they'll pay another another tuition to learn a skill that they could have gotten while they were in a public school, whether it's in Philadelphia or any place across the nation.
That's true. I see it all the time. I go to a school, they have one program, next you know, the next year the program is gone. It's a big problem in the public schools here in Philadelphia, especially when you have to talk to the guidance counselors or whatnot. They're usually not there. That's the first, I guess, the first people they cut when it comes down to cutting school budgets, the guidance counselors. So when you have established a relationship with one guidance counselor, and next you know, you call and they're not there no more. You have to start all over again. You know, that's the nature of this job that I do. You have to keep building with different schools, with the schools, with the different guidance counselors that come in and out all the time, with the principals, pretty much sitting down with the principals and talking to them and saying, look, this is an alternative for your students. If you know you have a student that's not gonna do well in college, send them to a trade school. Let them expose themselves to what is out there. This is a big market that's is open for a lot of fields that they can make a great living from. And this is what I try to speak with the principals, the assistant principals, the guidance counselors, even the teachers. And it's surprisingly, I do have teachers that I go to schools, and some schools that I go to that their husbands are tradesmen. And they'll tell the students, hey, you could make a very good living. I have one teacher, I'm not going to keep it to myself. She has a master's degree. Her husband never went to college. He has a trade background. And she tells them, he makes double what I make right now.
That's right. We always say that. I mean, if you're good with your hands, you can do anything. You're available. I mean, there's one thing that is a joke almost. When I go to the Home Depot, there's a man in there who is around the various plumbing supplies and all. He says, today we had another banner day. All of our plumbers got at least one contact because the people come in, they watch these various shows, How to Fix It Yourself on TV, have never had a wrench in their hand. They come in, they buy wrenches and all the stuff for the plumbing. The next thing you know, they either tighten up the screw to strip down to nothing. They break the bowl of the toilet thinking they're going to reinstall it, watching too many versions of, you know, This Old House or something. And that just indicates, because he's a former Marine, and he said to me, what that means is these people have had no hands-on experience whatsoever in their school. And that's very sad when you don't have a friend that could help you do it, or you don't know how to do something yourself. You have to be dependent on others. Today, when you go out to fix something, they say, oh, don't worry about fixing it. We'll just replace the motherboard, and that's it. It's all not good for America's economy and our future for the young people of America. Rich, this has been a very interesting broadcast, and I want to tell Alex's supervisor there that he is the best community outreach representative that I have seen at many of the fairs. I speak to everybody. You know, I was vaccinated with a Victrola needle, so I like to talk to everybody in the kitchen sink. And the thing is, you need somebody like Alex to go out and sell a program like this. And I'm sure that they appreciate what you do. I love hearing about that summer camp. I just can't believe it. That's a great, I know people, well, I wish I had known about it in advance. We would have been advertising it for a while, because people need that, especially juniors and seniors in high school. They need to know what they're doing. Very often people call upon me, they say, oh, why don't you come and speak about American Workers Radio, and American Workers need you, and, you know, talk about your commentaries and be a motivational speaker to my students. And I think there should be a counselor in every school going classroom to classroom to motivate those boys and girls, not just sit in a room. But that's not happening now, and something has to happen. Maybe it has to happen from Washington and Harrisburg and Albany and Trenton, but everybody has to get on some kind of a sheet of music.
Michael, can I just, and Alex, another thing that I noticed on your LinkedIn in speaking about Aviation Institute of Maintenance is that you have a bullet point that says conduct interviews with the parents of high school students. And I think that's a that bullet point right there, out of all of them, and they were all very important, but that one really stuck out to me. Well, because I think it's a phenomenal thing that the parents have the opportunity, as parents should be, you know, of course we say what should be and whether they do or don't, but the fact that you bring them in to have them fully involved and engaged in that, great point and great service for them. Because it really helps, I think, helps the kid and the child navigate through exactly what they want to be, like you pointed about earlier, you highlighted. You know, what do you want to be, and let the parents have that involvement and directly invite them in.
Well, definitely, that's one thing that we try to motivate our high school students is to make sure that they come in with the parents. We have to have the parents involved in the student's decision in life. We have to make sure that they know what they're going to do, you know, what the advantages there are, what career options there are, you know, so they can know exactly what they're getting into. Until they're 24 years old, parents are involved anyways because they have to make sure they have, you know, they're financially, the financial aid process is all the way to 24 years old where students have to, you know, depend on the parents for the financial aid process. Unless they're emancipated or whatever, not, that's different reasons. But if I always encourage, you know, if you're going to come and see me, bring your mom, bring your dad, or, you know, or both of them. Bring a friend, bring a brother, a cousin, a sister, someone that you think they're going to benefit from the same information that you're going to receive today as well. Because we wanted to get the support from the family support. My stepson is actually going through the same program right now, the aviation program. When he started this program, well, first of all, we never knew that he wanted to do this. He was an artist for trade in high school. That's why he always liked to paint and draw and whatever not. And I brought him to the summer camp. I said, come to the summer camp. It's free. You know, you get to see what aviation is like and whatever not. The least in our minds was that that's the profession that he chose. And he's, per se, you know, he's got two left hands. So for us, was like, okay, well, this is what you want to do? Okay, sure, we back you up. We support you. And it's important to have the support of the parents. It is very important.
Very well said. Ooh, that's interesting. Larkin, what else would you like to ask our guest?
I think we talked well enough about the cost, the tuition. I think that's usually for kids the elephant in the room. But I would imagine that between GI bills and just FAFSA loans and stuff like that, that it becomes at least affordable and reachable for each one of the students.
One of the biggest things that I see in talking with Alex today and also being with him at the job fair is that when the boys and girls leave this program, they have something under their belt for life, no matter what. If they get the degree from the institute, they really have some place to go, and that's the most important thing. That's what the problem is with so many of our schools. They graduate with the sheepskin, but there's really no place to go.
Well, also, is I think that what helps the students out is the hands-on training. You could go to a four-year degree if you're in school every single day and you're not actually working in that type of environment you're going to school for. When you graduate from college, the first thing they're going to ask you, do you have experience? No, because you've been in schools, you've been studying, you've been doing everything you can to graduate. In our school, you have the opportunity to get that hands-on training, that initial training that you need in order for you to start working at a place, at a company. So that hands-on training is very, very important nowadays because it exposes you to actually learn a little more about the products.
Well said, Al.
That's very unique point to make, and I'm sure one that you use in the selling process as you go out there. But that's exactly right. If I train to be a TIG welder and Mark hires me, he's going to have to show me job-specific stuff, but I better be able to, you know, put down a spot welder or, you know, lay down a bead or, you know, what good am I to him or anybody else? And that's done in trade schools.
Yeah. I love, Alex, as you mentioned that. You're giving experience out. Because, Larkin, you're exactly right. I mean, we're getting people, kids that never held a hammer, and I don't mean they're great kids. They're smart, but they've just never been exposed to it. They don't have. So we've got to start from scratch Henry, it'd be like you starting your baseball team. You get the kid that never held a bat or had a glove on at all. And it's hard, you know, when you're definitely, you got the games rolling, the practices going. It's you want them already up to speed to some point that you can work with modified. And two-year school, when do you stop learning? When do you stop going to school? Because, Alex, when they get this job in aviation, they're going to have to go and get updates. Technology's always training. So you're always getting trained down the line, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we teach you the basic knowledge and the basic skills that you need. Once you start and once you finish and you graduate and you get your AMP certification, because I tell everybody, you know, you could graduate from the school. That's great. But if you don't have that AMP certification, you don't have nothing. You need that AMP certification. You need to be able to pass the test, get certified. Once you start working for the company, that company, whether it's American Airlines, Delta, United, whoever, they're going to teach you the rest of the things that you need to know in life. It's a working process. You're always going to learn something new because planes are always evolving. There's something always coming out new. So the company is going to teach you what you need to know in order for you to be able to continue your career.
Alex, our time is getting close, but I want to tell you, you were a great guest. And I want everybody to know from the Aviation Institute of Maintenance that this gentleman that you sent out to the job fairs and is with us today, Alex Jimenez, has been a great compliment to everything that you're doing there to help us restore jobs and job skills in America. As we sign off today, I want to say a special thank you to all of our advertisers. They will be acknowledged tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday throughout our seven-day broadcast here on 860 AM. I want to thank Larkin Connolly, Rich Loges, Mark Andel, Henry Chaplinsky, and Alex Jimenez for joining us today. And I'm Michael Blihash, your host. Until I see you again on Saturday at 11 here on 860 AM, or we meet in my travels, or next Wednesday when we will be talking about the importance of freedom in America, and freedom is having a job and being able to be the best person that you can be. Alex, thanks for joining us today, and everybody there at the maintenance school, make sure you take good care of him when he comes back. Get him a sandwich and give him he's got a great smile, this guy. So we're going to depend on you to come back and tell us how the camps went.
Okay.
I'd like you to come back and let us know how many kids came and so forth and so on. Until we meet again, Davi Zenya, thank you so much for tuning in. Spread the word. A rebroadcast will be up on the internet in about 2 hours, and I'll ask Alex to send it out to all of his contacts as well. Thank you all.
Have a great week, guys, and bye, Made in America.